A half century after the first gains of the Civil Rights Movement, Henry Louis Gates isn't the only academic taking stock. While the most overtly racist barriers to achievement have dropped away, many more subtle impediments still exist. And often now it takes a deeper examination to explain the persistent specter of inequality. Thomas Shapiro has done just that in his new book, The Hidden Cost of Being African American, How Wealth Perpetuates Inequality. Professor Shapiro also teaches in the Heller School of Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. And he joins us now from the studios of WBUR in Boston. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be part of this conversation.
Well, as you've heard, I'm sure, Henry Louis Gates was talking with us about achievements of the black middle class. Your book actually argues that the middle class is in a more tenuous financial position, the black middle class, than their white counterparts. Why is that?
Well, I do think that's the case. I think the context is a very accurate one that Professor Gates talked about. I think it's a marvelous accomplishment that we all really do need to take stock of and figure out what it means that there's been a huge increase in the number of black middle class families since Brown versus Board of Education and since the Civil Rights March and passage of various laws. What concerns me, however, at the same time, is when I try and look at the stability and how precarious or how stable that African-American middle class may be in comparison to the white middle class, I come up with some reasons of concern. And the reasons of concern really revolve around the pillar of family wealth. I think that it takes two pillars to uphold a family's middle-class status in the United States. One is the pillar of income, education, jobs, all where we've seen great strides earned in schools, hard-earned strides won in schools and on the jobs on the part of African Americans. The second pillar, however, the pillar of family wealth, family financial assets, is not nearly as strong as it is in the African-American community as it is in the white community. For example, the average or the typical African-American middle-class family holds 30 cents in wealth for every dollar of wealth that the typical white middle-class family holds. And for me, in the people that I talk to in the studies and surveys that I looked at, I have become more and more convinced that what I call the racial wealth gap has become a new axis of inequality in the United States and helps us to understand how inequality is passed from generation to generation.
Well, perhaps you can outline some of the reasons for this that you give.
Well, some of the reasons for the 30 cents on the dollar, for example, on the one hand have to do with inheritance. What inheritance really allows us to look at to a greater extent than we ever have been before is what is passed on from the past into the present. It really allows us a way to look at the question of what is the effect of the past on the present. It's one of the core notions around our controversy and debate about affirmative action. Well, in the data that I've been able to look at, the ability in general, the ability of white families, white middle class and upper middle class families, to pass a legacy of wealth, financial wealth, to their children and grandchildren, gives those children a huge head start or kind of transformative assets in life. It allows them, in some instances, to buy a first home, for example. That's not the case in the African American community. So for me, one part of the understanding of the racial wealth gap has to do with the way the past has come to the table in the present. The other part has to do with some of the things that Professor Gates was talking about as well, that is the continuing discrimination in really crucial areas like homeownership.
Yeah. Thomas Shapiro is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American, How Wealth Perpetuates Inequality, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's talk about homeownership, because that's a really interesting example of what you're talking about that I think will help people to understand this. And that is the idea that one of the main assets for middle-class Americans is their home. But for blacks, until very recently, it was almost impossible to buy a home, and that those effects are still being felt. Maybe you can explain that a little bit more.
I think that's a great issue to explore a little bit. Let's start with understanding that for the American middle class, the 60% of American society, that literally 60% of all the wealth they own is in the form of home equity. That is, it's in the appreciation of their housing value. It's not in bank accounts, it's not in stocks, it's not in bonds. Some of it is. On average, it looks like 40%. 60% is what we hold in our home. Well, that's an incredibly big stockpile of wealth. That also allows us to ask the question, what are the ways in which whites and African Americans accumulate that home equity? What kind of communities do they live in? What are the conditions under which they buy homes, etc.? In data that I look at, and it's national representative data based on about 12,000 families, I was sort of staggered at the average difference in home equity. Homes increase in most communities, black or white. That's really important to understand first. But at the same time, the appreciation of housing values is clearly color-coded. In the communities where typical white and black families live, the difference is $28,000. That is, a home increases $28,000 greater over the period of a mortgage. It's about a 30-year period in a white community than it does in an African-American community. So if we want to understand how wealth is accumulated and generated differently in different institutional settings, looking at home ownership is a really crucial area to look at. That's just part of what we can look at. We can also ask, who had the opportunity to buy homes right after World War II? We can think of examples like Levittown or most of the typical American tract homes and suburbs of the time where African Americans and others, Jews, Catholics, etc., were excluded from buying those homes. So they were frozen out of that market to begin with, and residential segregation in the United States persists at a fairly high level, so communities themselves stay fairly segregated both by race and by class.
Given how uneven the playing field seems to be, according to what you're saying right now, is there any way to even it out at this point?
Well, I think there's a different road that we can go on. I mean, I think that, first of all, we need to continue with what we would traditionally call or know as the social assistance policies that are more often aimed at lower income and poor families, both black and white. But I have also been involved in a different kind of policy movement that centers around the notion of asset development. Asset development is an idea that tries to provide incentives for families that are asset poor to accumulate assets on their own so they can use those assets, hopefully, for the kind of purposes that would launch social mobility in a way that would make them much more independent, stable, and self-reliant. There are a lot of policies like this that we are trying at state levels, that some foundations are sponsoring demonstration programs across the country, and there are a few, small though, but a few nonetheless, exemplars of federal legislation that attempt to do this. One of the things that we have learned that is very important is the idea that when the incentives are right, when they're structured in a certain way, even poor families will save money. Now, I thought it was interesting in the first part of the hour, in listening to Professor Gates's very perceptive comments around the notion of, he was asking, where did deferred gratification go? Well, that is a concern. A program like asset-based policies has, as part of its value system and its core incentive, helping people to defer gratification today, to save for things that are, we hope, are more important in the future.
Let me just ask you one last question, and briefly.
Sure.
And that is, I mean, how much difference would this whole idea of family assets make in an individual's success at this point? I mean, how does it affect individual success, everything you're talking about?
I think there are tremendous impacts that we can look at. Sometimes we forget, those of us that are more successful and more secure, we tend to forget things like about half the businesses in the United States are capitalized on $5,000 or less. In most communities, you can go, the tuition for a community college, you could purchase for about $2,500 a year. There are programs, not in most cities I know of, large cities, but there are programs in some areas of the country where housing prices are affordable enough that someone could buy a home, that is, they could put up the down payment, that could be $5,000 to $10,000. What I'm trying to say is that assets is an area where a small amount can provide a large leverage for a family that's trying to launch its own social mobility to move its kids to a better school system,
and
a
make a very big difference,
etc.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks so
much,
Thomas Shapiro.
Thanks a lot, Lynn.
Thomas Shapiro is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American: How Wealth Perpetuates Inequality. It's Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary.